Magic.
And the world of illusion.
Magic TV.
And Craig Petty. Proudly present the Talk Magic Podcast. Every week we bring you awesome interviews with the greatest magicians that have ever lived. And now, here's your host, Craig Petty.
Guys, welcome back to Magic TV. My name's Craig. It's Tuesday. It's 9 o'clock, which means it's time for Talk Magic. And I am here with a legend of the UK magic community, one of the most creative guys I know, Mr. Chris Congreve. Chris, how you doing, mate?
Morning, Craig. Yeah, I'm good. Thank you, mate. How are you?
I'm good. And I'm really excited that you found the time to come on the channel and speak to me. I really appreciate it.
That was my pleasure, mate. Thanks for asking me. I appreciate it.
You know what? I feel like now, with you being on here, I've had the three legends of RSVP and Nalika. You know, seriously, I've had you, I've had Lee, and I've had Gary. And you guys were so influential to a lot of magicians. You know, there's so many magicians, Owen Strickland, Tom Mullinger, the list goes on, that point to you three guys as being the big inspiration for where they are right now. And I think you're responsible, the three of you, for more people getting into magic and doing magic properly than anyone else in the UK. I really believe that.
That's, that's really kind. To be honest, I'm not sure how true it is, but it's really nice of you to say. I mean, I've got to know Owen and Tom and people like that, you know, over the years. Gary and I did a workshop, oh God, how many years ago was it? And after that workshop, like, Tom packed his job in and went full-time. And he's been full-time magician ever since. It blows my mind that things like that happen, you know. It's great to hear. And Lee doing really well with his corporate stuff and that, which is great. And me and Gary, just like the old... old troopers, I suppose, just doing our thing, you know, or not.
You know, you've been around for a long time, and I want to talk about everything that you've done in your career. But start off, for people that don't know you, let's start from the very beginning. When did you get into magic? How did you get into magic?
I guess it was quite late in some respects. I'd always loved magic from watching Paul Daniels as a kid, but I never knew how to go about getting into it. I knew a couple of card tricks, you know, clock trick and all the things that we all hate to see when we do a gig, you know. And then it must have been mid-90s, I guess. So what's that? So, I don't know, 25 years ago. 25. About 1995, somewhere around there. A couple of things happened. There was a guy I was working for at the time who was into magic, and he was doing some like sponge ball tricks, and he got a D-light and things like this. And I was like, wow, that's amazing. And then I met Dave Taylor, Dave, the Silver Fox. I met Dave at a gig, and I said to Dave, I said, oh, I love what you do. I've always loved magic. You know, how do I go about it? And he wrote down Royal Road to Card Magic, and I went away from there. Didn't know about, this was before websites, the internet really hadn't really took off at this point. You know, I mean, you couldn't go on and buy books like you can now, or YouTube and stuff. And I went into Beattie's bookshop in Wolverhampton, and I got them to order the anything I could find by Hugard and Brow. And it was Expert Card Technique. And it's what a book for a beginner. It's absolutely it cripples your fingers, doesn't it? You know what I mean? But it was a starting point from there. And then, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 years after that, I found out about a magic shop in Bloxwich where there was a certain young lad who was demming magic, and you and Mike sort of pointed me in the right direction as well. So you had a hand in it, I think that's fair to say. As did Mike Russell, and from there, from going and then walking into that shop and seeing a wide, I don't know. That's when I learned about things like gimmick coins and gaff. Do you remember what he was doing? It was all the Keith Bennett stuff, wasn't it?
We had all of the Keith Bennett stuff. We also had all of the Eddie Gibson stuff. So we had the coin uniques and the three-point and all of that.
Oh, God, I used to come in there on a Saturday morning and spend my week's wages with you guys. You must have rubbed your hands every time I walked through the door.
It wasn't even my shop. He just paid me mainly in tricks to demo it. For me, it was just a good place to hang out and do magic.
It was. It was good. It was good days, you know. And when you think it's 25 years ago, mate, it's mind-blowing, really. So we both had more air and less weight back then. Do you remember?
I do indeed.
So from there, I don't know, early 2000s, I'm thinking around about 2000, must have been about 2003. So I'd only been doing magic for about 7 or 8 years, and I got a residency at TG Arthritis in Birmingham, and I was there every Saturday night for about 4 years. And that's one of that was like their flagship. I don't know whether it is now, but it was their flagship store at the time. It was like the busiest TGI's in the country. So honestly, I was so busy there. In 3 hours, you would see literally, I'm not exaggerating, you know, you'd probably do 50, 60 tables in that time. It was just table. And very, very quickly, you learn that all the stuff you've been reading and practicing when you're close and at home and everything just doesn't work. You have to do stuff that resets fast, that you have to be able to entertain and engage people. And, you know, I think about it now, and I'm sure every working magician must do this. You think back to your first gig or your first performance and you just go, and you cringe because you just, even that, no matter how much you've practiced and performed in front of your friends, we're in front of a paying audience for the first time, you must think, oh God. And that's when I realised all the material that I've been practicing and working on. Okay, some of it was good. It was good, but it was nowhere near. It was nothing like what I do now and what every working magician out there does. And that really, those 4 years working there is what formed my my whole thoughts on close-up magic. Really, all the material I do now. And you've heard people say it about my material. Hopefully, it's for the working magician. It's workers' material and so on and so on. Doesn't mean that people who just do it for a hobby and that can't do it and can't perform it. Far from it. But everything I do, I try to either have an instant reset or very, very quick. I mean, the fastest reset. I think the longest reset I'll do is probably 2 seconds, just putting a card back into a certain position, and that's it. So. And then from there, obviously, residencies brings in other work. So, you start going down and getting corporate work and things like that. So that's from a performing point of view, really. So, yeah. Creative-wise, I think, really, for me, like a lot of magicians, when you first start out, you think, oh, it's other people who are creative. I couldn't possibly be creative. I've heard people say it now to this day, oh, I couldn't possibly be creative. I think hanging around with creative people brings that out of you and you start thinking about it more. You know, for me, it was meeting and becoming friends with Gary Jones. Before I met Gary, I used to change things around. I'd work, perform other people's material and change things around. Yeah, so, creative wise, really, it was when you start hanging around with creative people. I met Gary Jones at, it was at a lecture at the Wolverhampton Circle of Magicians years ago, and it wasn't Gary that was lecturing, it was Andy Nyman, I think it was Andy Nyman, and we got chatting afterwards in the bar, and I think I was a professional, I think I'd just gone full-time professional at that time, so I was sort of, I recognised Gary was like a working magician, a professional, and I was picking his brains, you know how you do, a young working professional, and what do you do here, and I was hungry for sort of tips and this, you know, and Gary was, as he always is, he was really generous with his time. He gave me a few tips, and he said to me back then, he said, oh, you know, I really love when you did it, because I showed him, I think it was a bill switch routine, and I showed him my take on it, and he was, honestly, he was so nice, like, he always is a gentleman, you know. And we just became friendly, really. And then we bumped into each other at Blackpool and we got chatting and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, from that point, we started talking regularly on the phone. And then you start bouncing off ideas off each other. And then I go away and thinking about it. And then eventually I start ringing up saying, I've had this idea for a routine. What do you think about this? And he'd be like, bloody hell, that's good, you know. And then I think my first release, and you helped me with one of the routines on the DVD, actually, was Ice Coins. So that was about 2007, I think.
That first DVD was bought out through Alakazam, wasn't it?
That's it, yeah. That was the first. I mean, Alakazam were quite, obviously they've been around for a while then, but they were just getting into doing the DVDs and stuff. I think they'd had a few, and they were going down the route of these trailers and all this, and the trailer for Ice Coins, it was, they were trying to make it all edgy and street and all this, and they were doing all these visual things and everything else. And I think with Ice Coins, a lot of people sort of skipped it by because of the thought it was something that it wasn't. They thought it was this flashy, where actually, if they'd have called, I've said the beta this since, if they'd have called it OmniCoins at the time, you know, probably still be selling tons of them now, because it was an Omni deck finish to a coin routine, really. That was essentially my idea. And I've lost my bloody gimmicks now, to be fair. I'd still be performing it now if I could find them. So I'll get some more at some point. But yeah, so that was my first release, really. And from there, once you, and I think you know yourself, once you leave the day job behind and all you've got to concentrate is magic, you start thinking about it more, and that's when your juices start flowing and stuff. Not always. Some people, I don't know how guys find the time to. Having said that, I was going to say, I don't know how guys find the time to do a full-time job and create magic, but I'm doing that now as well, but more about that later. So yeah, anyway, I'm rambling. Creative.
No, you're not. This is really great.
I'll get fed up with my own voice sometimes, you know how it goes. So yeah, so creatively, it just went from there. And then before I know where it was, I was sort of putting a lecture together, and then you go out and do lectures and things like that. And then, yeah, it's just sort of evolved naturally, really, mate.
Now, I've got a question for you. You have, at one point or another, released magic with every magic dealer on the planet, as far as I'm concerned. You've done Penguin, you've done Alakazam, you've done Full 50, like all of them at one point or another.
Yeah.
Here's a question for you. We get a lot of people on this channel that ask about, and I want to talk to you about more about creativity in a bit, but a lot of people ask me how they can go about publishing their own magic trick. Now, you've worked with so many dealers, and for a time, you had your own production company as well, Workers' Corner, that I still think, me and Gary talked about this on his interview, the DVDs that you bought out through Workers' Corner, in my opinion, are some of the best DVDs that have ever been created. What advice, and we can talk about Workers' Corner if you want to, but what advice would you give to somebody that was wanting to release their own magic trick, both in terms of knowing when it's ready and then how to actually go about the process of actually releasing it?
Well, that's a great question. As far as knowing when it's ready, that's a difficult one, because what I found over the years is you think something's ready, and then you publish it or whatever, and then after I've published it, I'll carry on working on it, tinker with it, and I don't think it's ever truly. I can, I don't know about you, but I can always find ways to improve and work on something. I've never ever finished a product or a trick and gone, right, that's perfection, that's it, I can't touch. So as far as knowing whether it's ready or not, for me, now, I will always road test it before, and that's where being a working magician is good, because I can go out and I'll perform it at gigs. I've never ever published anything that I haven't been out and tried in front of a real audience. And sometimes that's not always possible, obviously, but even if I'm not doing a paid gig, I'll go out and I'll road test it in front of friends. I think you've been out with me and seen me before. I'll go into a pub, a bar, and I'll do a couple of tricks for people, and then I'll throw something new in there. Residence is fantastic for that, you know. I'll do all my regular stuff, and I'll chuck something new in the middle. I had a residency at football clubs for several years, and they're perfect, because you get to know the people, and they tell you. And I honestly, Greg, I've come up with stuff before, and I'll think, oh, that's really great, yeah, I really love that. And I've gone to do it at a gig, and they just look at you, and they know you. Now, if they don't know you, they'll probably just give you the old golf clap, you know what I mean? But when they do know you, they'll look at you and they go, and as good as your normal stuff, mate, and you just think, right, okay. So I think performing it is important. As far as the different production companies, I don't know how that came about, really. I think certain tricks fit certain companies better than others, maybe. If I was thinking about releasing something now with a sort of mind mentalism type feel to it, I would probably go to Alakazam and Peter. And then you just, yeah, because I know all these people personally as well, so I can just call them up and say. I've never actually done the thing where I've had to submit a trick cold, really. Even with Peter, my first release, I've known Peter for about 6 or 7 years at that point before, you know, so I called him up and told him about the trick over the phone. Does that answer the question?
It does. It really does, because I think it's the holy grail, isn't it, for a lot of magicians. You know, you talked about it yourself, that when you become a full-time pro, or when you get into magic, a lot of people, they see that there's creators that are kind of almost put on pedestals, and they want to be the guy that's creating magic. And I think a lot of magicians that come in, they think that being a magic creator is going to make you a millionaire overnight, and it's going to make you the most successful magician in the world.
Do people think that, really?
Genuinely, they do, mate, trust me. Do you want to dispel the myth right here and now?
Yeah, yeah. You're never going to... For me, publishing magic has always been... I've always wanted to share my ideas. And sometimes you wonder why you bother, you know, because you release something. For me, I've only ever released stuff that, like I say, has worked for me. And then sometimes when people sort of, you know, bash it and they run it down and stuff, and you just think to yourself sometimes, oh, do you know what? Why did I bother? Because you're right, you don't make a lot of money from it at all, you know. But you just, I like to share my ideas. The new ideas I've got at the moment, that I've been working on a few things, which again, hopefully we'll touch on later on. Instead of going down that route of releasing stuff as a one trick DVD, I'm putting them all into one place in a book. I know it's a bit old school, people don't like books and stuff, but I just, something I've always wanted to do. So that's the way I'm going with my next lot of stuff. Do you know what? It is nice to have you know, that first time, you're quite right, that first time you see a DVD and it's got your name on the cover. It's a nice feeling. It is a nice feeling, definitely. And it's something to be very proud of, really. Yeah.
Absolutely. The other flip side to creativity is, and you kind of touched on this earlier on, taking somebody else's routine and making it your own. How important do you think it is not being a Bill Malone clone, not being a Jay Sankey clone, and instead, and have you got any tips that you can share on how to actually, you know, create your own persona or develop your own handling of a routine, and, you know, so you're not just...
That's a great point, and you used to see that. I mean, nobody does do that. I go to magic clubs at the moment, but I haven't been to magic clubs for some time purely because I used to go to two or three. In fact, I've started my own, as you know, the 3SM. But when I was really busy as a working professional, I've been out doing gigs all weekend. The last thing I wanted to do in my spare time was go and do more magic. I just wanted to sort of get away from it, have a little break and things like that. But so I don't know whether that still goes on. It certainly used to. And I've even seen people do their own name and the Bill Malone thing, you know, like Chris Congreve. In fact, Bill Malone did that to me in Blackpool one night, but he called me Krispy Kreme. You asked Steve Deller about it, I'm sure Steve was there, and he was going, Krispy Kreme. But yeah, I think you just got to be comfortable in your own skin, you mate. You know what I mean? And go out, perform, get a feel for yourself, and be confident and comfortable with your material, and your own style will come. Whether some people I know work to a script and that works for them. Me, I've got a very, very loose script that allows for a lot of I think you're the same as these. It allows for a lot of interaction. If somebody says something to you, if you're stuck in the middle of a script, it's very difficult to say something to that person and then get back onto that script. So for me, that's never worked, but for other people, it does. I think if you've got a loose script, so you've always got something interesting to say. For me, that's always gags, jokes. I've got a ton. You've seen me working, honestly, 100 mile an hour. I've got loads of jokes and gags. I'm quite quick-witted at times. When people say something to me, I can come back instantly with an answer. But that just comes from experience. I think it's just experience. It all comes down to experience, Craig, doesn't it? And the only way you're going to get experience is to get out there and do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the more you do it, the better you'll get.
Absolutely.
I did an interview a little while ago with John Gustafaro. And he was talking about his one degree concept, which is, you know, changing things one degree and making things just completely different to how it was. And it's true. It really is, you know. Yeah. And one thing that I've noticed from you is you're always tweaking with stuff. You're always changing stuff and you're never happy. And I'm going to bring up something now that I know. Let's talk about Child's Play, because actually, before we talk about Child's Play, let me ask you a question. What's your favorite trick that you've ever released? Out of everything that you've ever, not the books, not the stuff that you've put on multi-trick DVDs, but what's your favorite trick that you've ever produced? Because for me, and you know that I've pretty much followed your career from the second that you started releasing stuff, and Ice Coins is up there, by the way, and I still have my gimmicks. And no, you're not having them. and I still use them at gigs right now. But my favorite thing is Child's Play that you've ever created.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that in a bit, but what's your favourite product?
I think it's either Child's Play or The Light. And for different reasons, really. The Light, Child's Play is something that people, working professionals, have always come up to me and said, I use that. In fact, a funny story, actually. I was doing a wedding. I was outside doing mix and mingle at a wedding. Lovely summer. I can't even remember where it was. It was 2 or 3 years ago now. And there was this really nice couple. And I went up to them and I did a couple of things. And they went, that's really good. We were at a wedding recently. And we saw this magician. And he showed us a photograph of his daughter. And they just described Child's Play back to me. And they said it was amazing. And I was just sitting there, you know, just going, you know. So Child's Play. Just because, and it's not the technical things of it or anything else. I'm really proud of the hook, the presentation, I think, more than anything else. The trick itself's good, yeah, it's fine, there's nothing wrong with it. I think it's the emotional side of it that people enjoy. And The Light, I've had so many lovely remarks off people. People like Joe Miranda contacted me a while ago saying, are you the guy who come up with it? And I was like, yeah. And he goes, that's the best car to impossible location I've ever seen. You know, and when you hear comments like that, you just think, yeah.
It was way ahead of its time. I think that every week there's a new car to impossible location that comes out with a Mercury folded card. Mm. And honestly, I don't think anything beats The Light. I really don't. I think that...
What I love about it, Craig, is with I don't know, let's say, now I love John Kennedy's mystery box. I love it. I think it's fantastic. But the minute you put that box down on the table, people go, that's going to be in there. They do. They might not say. And if you've got a clear box with a folded card in there, it's took all the mystery. For me, it's took all the mystery away. I'm not saying it's not a good effect. It is. But they don't think, oh, bloody hell, that's a card in there. For me, I prefer the surprise. When you open something up and that card's in there, they go, oh. And they're amazed, they're surprised. They don't even, when you then produce the sign, when you switch it, they're not looking for it because they're like, they're gobsmacked. As soon as I see that card inside there, in their head, it's that card. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? You could, honestly, you could have the worst removal technique ever. Often, they very rarely look back and see that it's empty. They do, and that's the nice thing about it. You can show that it's empty. But with the other ones, you know, and that's what I love about it, you know, the lighter. I'll give it people at the start, and I do a really rubbish gag, you know. Have you seen the joke that I did with that?
Yeah, which one's heavier,
Yeah, no, that's the lighter, okay. But I do that, it gets a laugh. And honestly, people sit there, when you're doing your routine, with the lighter in the hand, they forget about it. They forget about it. And then I'll go through the whole routine. And at the end, I'll just go, oh, by the way, you know that lighter? And they go, oh, yeah. And they forgot they've had it. And then when you produce a signed card out of something that's been in the hand the whole time, honestly, it's great. So I think those two, yeah.
So you can still get Child's Play. For those, again, we talked about this off camera, but a lot of newer people in Magic that have come into the Magic in the last 2 or 3 years, they look at the latest stuff. They don't look at the stuff that came out years ago. And Child's Play, I know, is still available. You can still get that.
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, but The Light, I mean, that was through Full 52, and they no longer trade anymore, do they? I mean, I don't think they're...
I don't know what's happened with them, but I guess not. I haven't seen anything from them for a while, so... And the last time when I spoke to Dave at Full 52 about The Light as before, you're quite right in what you say. Everything, when it comes out, it's got a life, hasn't it? You know, it'll sell, and then all of a sudden, bang, that's it. Doesn't sell anything else. And for those lighters to be made and manufactured, it was quite an expensive thing to do. But I had to find someone who'd get them made, and we had to have them all cut down and things like that. And it was, believe it or not, it was a company who were, they were model engineers. So they made like, railway models and things like that. And I think once they'd stopped selling, Dave didn't get any more made. And this was before they stopped trading and stuff. So now you can't get, the only place you can get them at the moment is just pick them up secondhand, really. And they don't come up there often, which is good, I guess. They're either gathering dust in the bottom of somebody's drawer, or people are using them.
Would you consider re-releasing it again through a different dealer, or
if Dave gave his permission, then yeah, of course. But we'd have to speak to Dave, really. It's obviously Dave bought the rights to it back in whenever it came. I can't even remember when it came out. Quite, to be honest, it must have been about 10 years ago, probably, something like that. Maybe 8, 9, 10 years ago. So yeah, if Dave was happy with that, then we would. But I think. And the great thing about it, again, is the fact that there's nothing to wear out and stuff. You can just, and you can put a note in there, you can have a card in there, the village.
Yeah. Well, on the subject of Child's Play, would you mind performing it for us? Would that be okay?
Yeah, sure. I haven't got the photograph and stuff. I've just explained to everybody out there, I've just moved house and must. I spent 10 minutes before this interview walking around where I am, trying to find packs of cards to show Craig a couple of tricks. And I think they're locked in my in a garage in a lockup somewhere. So I'm not going to do the full routine. But what I'll do is I'll talk about my daughter. Okay, so my daughter's four. I know it's a funny name. We like it. So my daughter's got into magic, right? She really loves magic and stuff, and she loves art and drawing and things like that. And in fact, she drew a playing card, which I've got here in my pocket, before I came out. I'm at home. I'm slipping into performance mode here. And she drew this playing card before I started performing this trick, blah, blah, blah. So all I want you to do for me, Craig, is just think of a card.
Got it.
Okay, tell me.
Seven of Hearts.
The Seven of Hearts, okay, perfect. So, and just so you can all see, that's the one you were thinking of, the Seven of Hearts, right? So, like I said, my little girl, she did make a prediction. She drew a playing card, which is in my pocket over here. And ladies and gentlemen, it's the Seven of Hearts.
Perfect.
So that's obviously a very basic performance and presentation. When you buy the DVD, you get like there's a photograph on the disc that you can print off. But very often, and I'd love you to tell people what you told me about yours, the way you do it in a second as well, if you don't mind. But there's a guy there, Dean Jorgensen. I don't know if you know Dean, a working professional. He got a film made with his son, and he shows people his film. And there's a film of his son drawing cards and everything. People use pictures of their own kids, grandkids and stuff, and make it very personal. But just tell everybody about the way you do it as well, because I think this is great.
Yeah, so Ryland is a good magician, as anybody will know that watches this channel, and he's pretty good at doing the back palm. So I shot a video of him standing there and saying, "Hi, I'm Ryland, I'm Craig's son, watch this," and then just showing his hand empty on both sides, and just pop, making the card appear, the three of spades, three of clubs, and then turning it around and showing it, and then saying, "That's magic." And I upload that onto my Instagram account. So when I'm out gigging, I borrow someone's phone and I say, "Hey, can you just access Instagram for me?" And when they open it and I say, "Type in slightly unusual," which they do, and I say, "Now there's a problem with this. Can you see what the problem is? You're not following me." So I hit follow, new subscriber, boom. And then I say, "Now, do you see that video there? That's a video of my son. We'll get back to that in a minute." Then I do the routine. Yeah. And when it comes to the point of showing the photo, instead, I get them to play the video. And it's Ryland doing a bare hand production of the card.
And
out of it as well.
Just to explain to people who haven't seen the whole route, that was an abbreviated version we just did. In the full version that you would do at gigs, there's two cards selected. And the one being the three of clubs, which you produce it. That's a fantastic way of doing it. And like you say, it's growing your audience all the time, isn't it? Perfect.
And I always have to, every week I have to, well, not in the moment because I'm not gigging, but every week I have to re-upload that video so that it's near the top, else I'm going to be scrolling all the way down the feed to find it. So.
Of course, yeah. And mobile phones have changed the way that we do at gigs and stuff now. Anything that uses, I published something in my book, and I think it was on Automata, the DVD me and Gary did, uses a mobile phone, and it was for a version of, what's it called? Free will, just using a mobile phone. And at the end of it, they've got a link to your website and a text message from you as well. So it's, using mobile phones where people, like you said, subscribe to your social media or they get a link to your website. It's better than handing a business card out, you know, in my opinion. It's fantastic. Yeah.
Really is. Awesome. Well, I love, and that is still available. Charles Play is still available. I want to ask you one more thing about creativity.
Yes.
Find the inspiration from for a trick, because a lot of the time, I mean, you've been in magic for so long, you've got millions of moves, you've got a lot of knowledge, so you can construct something fairly easy. But surely the big problem is actually getting the inspiration in the first place.
I knew you were going to ask me this question, and I've been thinking about it for a couple of days with this interview coming up, and I still haven't got an answer for it. I can't give you an answer, because every single trick that I've released, the inspiration has come from different places. Do you know what I mean? So in my new book that I'm working on, there's a few mentalism routines, and basically this year I wanted to go back to doing I wanted to move away from magic a little bit and do more mentalism stuff. So with that in mind, I started creating my own material. So that was born from necessity, if you like. It's something I wanted to work on. And then one of them was one of the tricks in the book, which I think you've read. Well, I've sent you a copy, haven't I, of some of the new stuff. It was getting a prediction of a freely thought of number or somebody's initials onto a coin. Okay. And that was my thought process. I wanted I wanted something where there was an impossible thing in a mentalism routine. You've got, you know what I mean? So that was my start point. For Child's Play, there was another trick that Gary and I released years ago called Touched. And it was a great trick. It was good. It was, and I was thinking about it, and then I thought, wouldn't it be a great idea if, and then I just came up with a presentation. And to be honest with you, more or less, the routine is still Touched, but it took on a whole life of its own just by changing the presentational angle. The light, again, I couldn't even, do you know what? I think my inspiration for that was, do you remember the Carter Tic Tac that Jesse Feinberg put out?
Yeah. Jesse Feinberg brought out two different versions at the same time.
Right. So Jesse's one, it was a card, and then on the back, there was like a picture of some fingers. Do you remember? Yeah. And then he sort of turned it over, and then you've got the fingers there. And I thought, well, that's a really cool idea. And I thought, I wonder if that would work in a lighter. And my first prototype was with fingers in there. And then I just thought it looked weird. So I got some silver card. Well, first of all, I got some metal sheet and put it in there, and it looked okay. And then I bought some silver card. I thought, wow, that's great, you know. So it comes from different places to make this. Sometimes I'll set myself a problem. Okay, right, I want to do this, and I'll sit there and I'll think about it, because I've got something at the moment in mind, and I'm really up a cul-de-sac at the minute, but I'll get there. But I've got a problem that I want to solve. So, and I look at it that way, as like a problem I want to solve. So, yeah, that's it. Does that make sense?
No, it does. It does. I suppose just be open to inspiration hitting you anytime, anywhere, right?
Do you know what? It's the worst thing in the world, because for me, and I'm sure you're the same, and anybody who's ever created a magic trick, when do they pop into your head? Just as you're about to fall asleep. It's right, isn't it? You're lying in bed, and you just give it, and you just think about it, and then you go bang, and you're wide awake. Or the worst thing is you nod off, and then you wake up the next morning, you can't flipping remember what you know, where you were the night before. That's what people always say, don't I leave a pen and paper beside the bed, but I never do. In fact, I've done it before where I've wrote, you know, I've come up with routines and stuff. I even did a whole booklet called The Forgotten, because I came up with a routine, completely forgot about it for years, like for absolutely years. And then one day I was talking to Lee Smith on the phone, and he says, oh, do you still do that trick? And I was like, I completely forgot about that. And it was Drawn. Have you seen Drawn, my routine?
Yeah, very good.
And I've started doing it again, and it's a great routine. And I published it, and it's going to be in the new book, actually. But, you know, you just... It does, you're right, it strikes anywhere, even on the toilet.
Anytime, anywhere.
Yeah.
Awesome. And you've talked about your book that you've got coming out. This is your second book, right?
Yeah.
First book was released a couple of years ago at the Blackpool Magic Convention. And
yeah.
You did that through... through the magic scene.
Magic scene, yeah.
Yeah, and that was very, very well received. Is this also coming out through Magic Scene as well?
No, I'm publishing it myself. So Steve Hairsign at Hairsign Press is doing the actual printing. And Mick Wilson, good pal of mine, Geordie Jedi, he's doing the layout and stuff. But I've, as I did with the last one, really, I wrote all the words were mine. I think they edited it a little bit and stuff like that, you know, to be fair. And they took some photographs and stuff. And so which is what Mick's doing. But I'm just going to publish it myself. Yeah, you touched on it earlier. The only other thing I've sort of produced myself, Gary and I did our production company Workers' Corner sort of 12 years ago now. I think it was 2008 we did that, 2008, 2009. And this is the first thing that I've sort of put out since then. I've done small booklets and just unlimited runs and things like that. And I'm still not sure whether this book's going to be a limited run or whether I'm going to get a lot of them done or what's going to happen at this moment in time. But it's still a work in progress. Gary Jones has sent a routine as well. You've kindly offered to send me a routine as well. So it'll be a couple of guest things in. I'm going to do it myself and see how it goes.
That's great. Because Workers' Corner was amazing. I mean, going back to Workers' Corner, the stuff that you put out through Workers' Corner, the pocket-to-pocket DVD, the pseudo-pickpocketing, the coins across stuff, everything was just, well, the clue is in the name of the company, right? Workers' Corner. It was working material.
It was, and I'm sure Gary said this when you spoke to me the other week, that the videoing was terrible. And I mean awful. We made the mistake, really, of we got a wedding videographer to do the filming for us, and he was watching it like a layman, and he was trying to follow it, and he was following what we were saying, and we were fooling him with certain, not fooling, that's the wrong word, but he was basically doing what you would do as a layman watching a magic trick. So he was doing this and he was missing out, do you know what I mean? Yeah. So that really, the filming was quite poor, but the material we still use to this day, most of it, you know what I mean? The pocket to pocket stuff, as you've mentioned, the three fly and the coins across routines and that, you know, we're very proud of it at the time. It's just the filming and the sound quality was poor. We keep saying, you know, one day we'll go back and do it again, put the same stuff. And obviously it's things that we've added to it over the years, but we just haven't got around to it, you know. It's one of those things on the back burner, you know. We'll do it one day, hopefully, before we're too old.
And how have you made the new book different to the first book? Because the first book was so well received. Is it a lot more mentalism? Because you've talked about how you've been creating more mentalism now. What's the differences?
Okay, so this time, there is some mentalism in there, but also... I think every trick in the book so far, you've got to put some effort into not performing it as such. It's not that difficult to do. In fact, some of it's self-working, but you've got to go away. Like I mentioned earlier, I think probably three or four or maybe more of these things in this book could have been released as a single trick package with the cards and everything else. People will be able to make it up themselves, but they've got to put some effort in. They've got to go and buy certain things, or they've got to, you know, go and source certain things to be able to do it. There's a couple of impromptu things in there, or, you know, there's a couple of things that you stuff that you'll probably have sitting around in your magic office at home, or, you know, your magic den crap hole at home. But I think, yeah, that's certainly part of it. And it's all like my first book was basically my very early stuff, and it was more or less everything that I'd released here, there, and everywhere, all in one place. Whereas this, it hasn't been published anywhere else, other than there's a few things that have appeared in limited run pamphlets. But most of the stuff, it's appearing in print or anywhere for the first time as well. So that's good.
Well, can you perform one of the routines out of the book? Would that be okay?
Yes. So this is something. This is something I've been working on for years, Craig. It's can you say this? It's called dead cutting. All right, isn't this the most weird angle to perform magic ever? when do you ever do this? Your neck disappears and your elbows come up. It's called dead cutting, and basically all I want you to do for me is just name any card in the pack, and I'll cut straight to the card you're thinking of.
The Five of Hearts.
Five of Hearts, okay, so straight to the Five of Hearts, yes. I've got to be honest, that's really embarrassing. I thought I took the jokers out of the pack, so hang on. I'm going to try and balance these here so there's no funny business. Well, not too much anyway. I'll be honest now, if I was going to cut straight to the Five of Hearts, you'd probably think I've put it in a certain place in the pack, and I'd be able to get straight to it and things like that. So I'm not going to do that because it's wouldn't be that impressive now. But I did say that I was working on doing more mentalism and mind reading type of stuff. And to be honest, that's what I've done. Now, there's two jokers in the pack, right?
Yeah.
And you could have thought, and you genuinely could have thought of any card, Craig. We haven't set this up before, have we? And you went for the Five of Hearts, right? Yeah. And on the back of the jokers.
That's great. That's awesome. That's such a working routine. And you do so much stuff with writing on the backs of cards.
I know. Tom Mulligan texted Mickey out of me. Like, I'll say something on Facebook saying, oh, I've got a new trick come out. And he'll just say, you know, is there any writing on the back of the cards? And I don't know. The thing is, it's free space, isn't it? You know what I mean? It's like on the back of a business card. You've got some free space. You can do anything with it. You know, I've wrote that many predictions and things on the back of the cards over the years. That plot there, that thing there that I've just shown you, I've been tinkering with that type of routine for years now. And to be honest, that's the strongest I've got. I know I said earlier, I never completely walk away from a plot or whatever. That's as close as I've got to that now. I can't really, at this moment in time, I can't think how I'll, it might not work for everybody, but for me, I just love that idea. And Owen Strickland's been performing this. He's one of the few people I know who's doing gigs at the moment, or, you know, and even then, not that many, but the odd one, you know, socially distanced wedding. And he said he really builds up the impossibility of, like, oh, I'm gonna dead cut to the card. It's really difficult. And he says he builds it up to the point of where they're almost annoyed, you know, and you get that, and then you just go, oh, and it's the Joker. And I love that, Mark. I use that in something else. Have you ever seen me do my card to box routine using John Allen's Destination Box?
No, I haven't.
Have you not? Okay, so it's the same thing as that, right? So I've got the box, it's there, and I go to open it, and then I carry on talking, and then I go back. And you see everybody leaning in, and they go like this.
It's that anticipation.
Absolutely, and when you get them, and I do it with my lighter trick as well, and then they're going in like this, and then you relax again, and then you go, and then when you open it in the box case, they're expecting a card, and you open it, and it's the perfume and the other box, and then I'll just go, would it be bloody good, wouldn't it? They all relax and they laugh, and you've got all the time in the world then to do the move. This is the same thing, you know, and you just go like that, and then And then you cut like that, and it's the joke, and you go, it would have been bloody good, wouldn't it? You know, you get the big laugh off a table, and you go, oh, to be honest, I forgot to take the jokers out. Dump them on the table, and then build up for the big reveal at the end. So, yeah, I think it's a great trick, but then I would not.
I'm kind of biased, but I agree. It's the thing about, I always think when you're writing on the backs of cards, it's almost shock value to a layman.
Yes.
Because, you know, a layman, they've got their family deck of cards that they've had
in family for a generation.
Should we go play cards? Let's go get the pack of cards out the cupboard, shall we? Let's just blow the dust off. Right, come on, let's start. It's that thing. To the thought of writing on the back of a playing card, scared, it freaks them out.
Why did we move to Leeds for a second then, mate?
I don't know. The person who I was thinking of, Leeds. Oh, dear. But then when you start showing stuff is written on a card, they can't comprehend it, and it just feels so shocking. I know there's somebody watching this that's going to go, writing on the card is shocking, shut up. But it is.
No, it's true. Really, it's true. It's like when you're doing your ambitious card, right, how many times you get them to choose a card, you give them a pen, write your name on the card, and they go, are you sure? Don't know. And how many packs of cards do you get through? We all get asked the same questions all the time. That's why my trick drawn is brilliant for that. I hate to sound like I'm trying to give things the big sell. I'm not. It uses a blank card. And if you haven't seen it, basically what I do is I get somebody to think of a card, think of any card in the pack, and I put one down on the table. And they go, okay, so you're totally free choice. You could have thought of any card in the pack. And they go, yeah. And they go, wouldn't that be amazing if that was your card? And they go, yeah, yeah. And they turn it over, it's a blank card. And I go, yeah, that would have been bloody good, wouldn't it? You know, and they laugh. But now I'll give them a pen and I say, right, what I want you to do is design your own five of clubs or whatever. And it's great then because if they go like the 10 of diamonds, you go, oh, I bet you should set the 3 in there, don't you? Or stuff like that. They do it, they sign it. And then I've got the other gags like, you know, oh, he's no Picasso, is he? Yeah. Then again, neither was Rembrandt, you know, all this type of stuff. But it's a really unique card. And I'll do my ambitious card routine using that and then produce it from the lighter or wherever at the end. So, but yeah, you're right. Signing the card, writing the card is something that's alien to people.
You know, you've talked throughout the whole of this interview about routines that you've created and routines that you've done. And, you know, you've got a new book with 20 or 30 or 40 routines in.
No, there ain't that many, mate, to be fair.
10, 20, I don't know. But you've created so much material. Plus, I know that you do other people's material as well. I know you do a lot of Gary's stuff. You do some of the Lee stuff. I've gigged with you and I've seen you do like Richard Sanders Fiber Optics and stuff like that. So I know other people's material that you work as well. How do you work on material selection when you go to a gig? Because something that a lot of magicians, especially newer magicians that have just started working, struggle with is pocket management. You know, they walk out and they look like the 50 stone big they actually are because they've taken every single trick that they've got. Yep. And they've literally, I've seen the magicians buy these special vests for like 200 quid. It's like, it looks like they've got sort of body armor under them with like packs of cards. And you go out with like what looks like nothing. You can perform hours. So my question is, how do you do your pocket management? And how, with such a massive repertoire of material, do you select what you do? Yeah.
Okay, so for me, it's more about the entertainment value. So you're right, fiber optics is something I've done for years. And I never leave it out ever because of and you've seen me working a table. Okay, so I'm at a table for about 2 minutes before any magic's happened. I've introduced myself. I tell a quick gag. Okay, I hand the ropes. My opening thing, and this isn't going to suit everybody. And please don't think badly of me. But I say, I'm going to show you something now with an everyday object that you would find in any bedroom. And I pull a piece of rope out of my pocket. And people find it that it's funny. You know, obviously you wouldn't do that at a kid's show. But it's funny. And I hand it out. I did at one point. I went into Ann Summers and got a carrier bag. And then I used to pull the rope out of the Ann Summers carrier bag as well. You know what I mean? It's just... But by the time I've handed the ropes out, I've done the jokes and everything else, it's been 2 minutes. I haven't done any magic at all. And what you've done, or what I've done, is there's always going to be... I'm going to rewind a few years, right? And I used to walk up to a table and I go, my name's Chris, I'm the magician, okay? And there would very often, not always, but okay, I'm going to say sometimes there'd be a person at that table, and as soon as you say that you're the magician, they'll just go. And they'll switch off, or they'll get up, and they'll go to the toilet, or they'll go to the bar, because they either don't like magic, or they've seen a magician before that they didn't like, or whatever that reason is. As soon as you announce that you're the magician, they switch off, and they switch off. So now, for me, I walk up, and I've got more of a look with the destination box. I don't do the trick. I'm holding it, and I say, I need somebody really trustworthy to look after this for me. And I look at everybody, and I go, oh, I'm really sorry, I've got the wrong table. I'm going to walk off. Now, I've done that before when there's been a vicar at the table, and it brought the house down. It was hilarious. You know, they thought it was brilliant because they all looked at the vicar, and I went, no, wrong table. But you see what I'm saying? You're breaking down those barriers before you've announced that you're a magician.
Very quickly, I'll just tell you, that's one of the things I love about you. I've gigged with you. The first time I gigged with you, I was pissed off because we were working tables together and I was doing my thing at my table, and every table you went to, people were just like so noisy, so vocal, laughing, cheering. And I'm just like, what the hell is this guy doing that I'm not? You know
what I was doing? I was paying them.
Now it all makes sense. But, you know, I know there's magicians out there that go, oh, you shouldn't use stock lines and stock jokes and stock gags because, you know, it reduces the art. And to them, those people, I say that's total bollocks, because it may be, you know, something like, oh, this rope that you can find in any bedroom might be something that magicians have heard a lot, but you came with it. Laymen have never heard that before. And ultimately, it's about entertainment and it's about entertaining people.
Absolutely. And it's like what I said earlier on, Craig, I've got a loose script, and the thing is, with this, when you've got a loose script like that, you allow yourself possibilities to say other things. I'll do this set at one table, and I'll say certain things, and the conversation will go one way, and I'll do certain jokes, and then I'll get to the next table, and because I've got, again, the loose script, it's the same tricks very often, but it'll go in a different way. And also, just by doing a little cheeky one liner like that at the start, you find out where the threshold is, okay? Because I always hand out the small rope in fibre optics. I always give it to a bloke, the biggest bloke you can find at the table. And what I do, I wish I'd got the rope with me now, actually. But I hold the small rope up in the hand like this, okay? So you imagine it's there like that. And I let go, and it just goes, ew, like that. And it's very phallic looking. It looks like that. It looks like exactly what, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And you find out where the line is, because very often they'll be making the jokes. And they're doing, do you know what I'm trying to say? And that they then set the bar.
Yeah,
absolutely. So if they're very reserved when I say this about the rope, I know to check it back a little bit. But if they start coming out with the knob jokes and everything else, then I know that I'm okay. Don't get me wrong, I'm never rude and I'm not blue, but I know that I can be a bit cheeky.
And for me, that's one of the signs of being a successful working magician, is knowing where the line is and adapting your material and your presentation to fit. You need to know very quickly when you go over to a table exactly how you need to pitch it. And you might go up to a table with a particular set in mind and a particular structure, and you might have to completely throw that out the window based on the reaction of the audience. And if you just go to a table and you have this set thing that you're going to do regardless, you're never going to be as successful as somebody like you who basically wings it.
It's like, I guess so. I wouldn't say I was winging it exactly, but I know what you're trying to say. It's like, it's professional winging it.
it's almost like, I'll tell you what it's like. It's almost like a choose your own adventure book that we had as a kid. Right. Do you want to go to page 7 or do you want to go to page 14? Your performance is like a choose your own adventure book. You are prepared to go in whatever direction the audience leads you.
Absolutely. And you know, that's, for me, that's the great thing, because you then never get tired of, if you just think, if you're saying the same things over and over and over and over again, and you get nothing back from the audience. Honest to God, mate, I've stood there at a table before now performing, and somebody will say something, and I've stood there for like 2 or 3 minutes, just absolutely creased up laughing at them. And you know, and once you do that, it's like corpsing on in the pantomime, and you know, you go, and you know full well that they're putting it on. And they laugh and all this, and they forget the lines and stuff. But the audience love it. They love it. And it's the same in close-up. honestly, some of the best lines that I do, and I can't give you the lines now because I'm not performing and it's a completely strange, different environment. But when I'm performing now, somebody will say something and you've got to come back. And honestly, some of the best lines that I've ever had have come from an audience member ad-libbing, or I've ad-libbed something myself and it's got a big laugh and you think, yeah, and you use it. I mean, I don't use it now, but I used to, because I used to be a lot heavier than I am now. And I used to do coins across, and you go like, so the first coin, it goes up here across the 48 inch. And this bloke at the gig once, he just went stomach. And I was creased up. I was just thought it was hilarious. So from then on, I used it for ages. 48 inch stomach, you know. So yeah, anyway, going back to your original question about choosing material, it's all about the entertainment. I don't want to stand there and do 10 card tricks. So I like to vary the look and the feel of it. So I'll do my rope trick because it's visual, the whole table can see it. It's up here, okay? Then I'll do something, very often I'll do coin vexed, I'll borrow a coin and bend it. I've got a one coin routine that not many people, I think you might have seen me do, I'm not sure, but it's a one coin routine. I don't have two coins or whatever, or a business card or anything. As far as the spectator's concerned, I'll borrow a coin, and then I'll do a visual bend. And then from there, sometimes I might do a ring flight, or I may do a bill switch, something quick, really. And then I'll finish with a card routine to impossible location, lighter, box, wherever it might be, including like card to wallet, omnideck and all that type of stuff. And then I've got some other stuff. If you've got time, I've got round everybody. I've got some more stuff where you can sit down and you can do a little bit more intimately at the tables or wherever. If you've got that lull, you know, it's a wedding or something, perhaps.
So you take different. So would you choose your material based on the gig and the environment within the gig? So for example, you've got something like Child's Play. Are there certain gigs where you go, right, okay, I've got a gig tonight. Child's Play is not going to work for this type of gig. So instead I'll do this instead, or.
Yeah. I'll get there and decide and just, because for me, all the material that I do has been tested. All the material that I've got in my case ready to go, I've performed and I'm happy with it. So, I know that Child's Play would work for any audience, really. The only audience I wouldn't use Child's Play for, maybe, would be like, a young engagement party where it's all young people. Perhaps I'd leave it out there. But any other audience where there's anybody who's sort of over 30, there's generally, they've either got kids they've got kids. At least somebody at that table is going to have kids. And it's that hook. As soon as you say, have you got children, you know, I'll do this gag, and I'll do it at lectures especially. I'll say, have you got children or access to children, you know? And then obviously the other thing is as well, and going back to the TGI days, is some of the stuff I can do with very little talking. It's visual, and the reason from that was TGI is after sort of 8 o'clock, half past eight, it used to be very loud. So you have to develop a routine where even if they can't hear what you're saying, they can see what's going on, and that's important too.
Talking about TGIs, what we do a Q&A on this channel, so every single Sunday I answer questions of the week, and one question that comes up every week without fail is, how do you get and keep a residency? Now, you talked about TGIs, but I know you've had so many residencies over the years, football clubs. I remember you spent a long time working at Chiquitos. You've had so many residences. Can you give a very quick piece of advice about how to get a residency, how to keep a residency, and what you can, how you work a residency? Because I mean, this is the sort of stuff you talked about, how you know you did a training course and you got, you know, people like Owen Strickland and Tom Mullinger into Magic, and he was there and he quit his job. That was based off this sort of information that you gave him. You know, you gave him this information. And here he is now, all these years later.
He's doing really well, yeah. And it's great to see, to be honest. Residencies, really, I don't know whether people, there's as many these days, because obviously all these chains are suffering and closing down and stuff. But for me, the Chiquitos one came from literally just walking in and asking to speak to the manager, giving him a business card, and you know, saying, this is what I do. Would you be interested? And he was like, well, yeah, I would. And it was as simple as that. It's like any other sales, isn't it? You know, it's a numbers game. If you approach 50 restaurants, then you know, there's a good chance that one of them is going to say yes. TGI's came from an agent. So I got this agent started using me at TGI's, and it just went from there, really. And I think in the end, the TGI's and the agent had a falling out, and they asked me to carry on without the agent. And the agent knew about it, but there was, you know, it was one of them, really. Well, Frankie and Benny's. So I did a lot of Frankie and Benny's for a time, and that was just right place, right time. You know, you see, you meet somebody. I got booked, I think, again by an agent. To do an opening night for them, and the area manager was there, and he saw what I did, and he really loved it, and he put me in about 6 or 7 of his restaurants. And these were back in the early days, when I was about 2003, around there, 2003, 2004. Whether it's restaurant, I haven't seen a magician working in a restaurant like that around here for a long time now. I don't know whether you do any of these days or not. I know you used to do a lot as well.
I haven't done restaurants for a very, very long time.
I hate working restaurants, I've got to say. I'm not a fan.
Hard work. It's really hard work.
Yeah. TGI's was good to a point because everybody was out for a good time. But you know yourself, at a restaurant, you walk up to a table. Hey, guys. Hey. Fuck off, mate. I'm bonding. You know. And they just, you know, they don't want to know. They don't. And they're really, some people were just flat out rude. Whereas if you go to a wedding or a corporate event, you might get the odd rude person at a corporate event, but it's rare. In fact, the one night, I'll tell you this, I was doing a corporate gig with Dave Jones. It was a big corporate Christmas party, and I walked up to a table, and this guy, and as I approached the table, this guy goes, not interested, mate. He says, I never even had a chance to say anything, so I'm not interested. He says, in fact, on a scale of 1 to 10, and I says, I'll just stop you there, mate. I said, your boss has booked me to come and entertain you tonight, and you're being really rude. And I went, turn around, and he followed me. He's like, I'm really sorry, mate. You're right, I was rude. I'm sorry. But as soon as I mentioned his boss had booked me, you know what I mean? But it's rare. And weddings, everybody's there for a good time, a great time, and parties and stuff. They're there for a good night. So restaurant's not my favourite gig in the world, but it's a good way of getting paid to harness your skills, isn't it? You know, which is, I think we both used it for that, Craig, to be fair, didn't we? Back in the early days, you know, you were out doing the 2-for-1s, the spirit stuff, weren't you?
Spirit group, I kind of did all of them. Well, you were doing all of the Frankie and Benny's in the restaurant.
Yes, it might, huh? Yeah, well, you know what I mean? It's it got us both to where, you know, it's really great. The tricks aren't they? But what it teaches you and what is how to interact with a live audience when, you know, all the time. And you know yourself, when you've worked those restaurants for a few years, it's very rare you'll do a gig now where there's something happens that you haven't seen before, isn't it? You know, someone else says something to you and you've heard it before and you just go bang and you just got an answer straight away. You know, it just comes naturally after a time.
It is. I mean, like I say, I haven't done restaurants in years, but I just told you off camera, I'm now doing a kind of a residency, isn't
it? Yeah, that's
a magical barman, and yeah, I'm having a blast with it. You know, it's a good laugh.
That's just a great gig, actually.
It's fun. It really is. It really is. You mentioned agents. Now, that's another holy grail for Pitt. You know, when you first get into magic and you decide to go professional, your big focus switches from learning magic to getting gigs.
Getting work, yeah.
And not everybody is great at marketing. Not everyone's a marketing.
I'm terrible.
But you've always steadily worked and worked and worked, and you've always had. And one of the things that you've done is you've managed to get in with quite a lot of agents, and it's almost like banging your head against a brick wall a lot of the times, you know, because a lot of agents have established acts that they've worked with for years. You ring them up or you send an email, and it just gets ignored. Have you got any advice as to how to get in with an agent?
To be honest, man, they're a dying breed now. They're very few and far between, from what I can see, because the bookers now, they just go direct. You know, the director of a company will just go, yeah, we're having a party, and they'll get to the young girl in the office, can you organise this? And then they'll go on the internet and book a magician and a DJ and so on and so forth. Back in the day when a lot of my work used to come from agents, and it was just a case of occasionally I'd bump it. There's one guy who still uses me from time to time. I met him at a gig in London. He happened to be there. We got chatting. There was another agent. I think I sent him some promotional material through the post. But nowadays, honestly, if it's like with the, you know, back when we started, the yellow pages, you know, it was like that. You could have beat somebody to death with it, you know. And the entertainers section was, you know, then people were paying like $5,000 a year, weren't they, back in the day, to have a full colour page and the yellow pages. The yellow pages come through your letterbox now, and it's you know, it's like Radio Times, isn't it? It is, and the whole process of getting work is just completely. I mean, I've been left behind in a lot of it. A lot of my work comes from word of mouth. And as you know as well, I had a year off with all my health problems, and it was difficult to come back from that too. You know, I was still working my way back when all this COVID hit and that, you know what I mean, which has just killed it off for everybody, hasn't it?
I want to talk to you about that, if you don't mind, because, and there's a reason I want to talk to you about that. Right now, obviously, we're filming this beginning of November, so it's been about 7 or 8 months now that we've been in a situation where all over the world, but especially, you know, I can talk about the UK because I'm in the UK as are you, we're basically unable to work. You know, I mean, first of all, we had lockdown. Then after lockdown, we had, well, you can't hang out with more than 6 people. Then we had the rule of 6, which made it almost impossible to do private parties. And now, as of today, we're just going into a second lockdown.
Yeah, first day into it, yeah.
It happened beyond that, and a lot of entertainers, a lot of magicians especially, are really feeling anxious and stressed. And you know, I've seen posts from magicians that I really respect that have said, I've never felt so bad in my life. I'm constantly stressed. So many magicians have actually just quit. You know, magicians have actually just completely just given it up, and they've got themselves another job with no intention of coming back again, which is heartbreaking for me to see, because I know how good they are. You went through this before COVID, like you said, because, and you know, if you want to talk about that, that'd be cool. But you might be able to offer some advice. There are people watching this that are struggling, unable to perform, don't know what to do about it, and struggling to, you know what's kind of next. And, you know, at some point soon, it's going to get back to normal, but we don't know when that is. Can you offer any advice to these people? Because you went through this a few years ago, didn't you?
Yeah, so I had, for those that don't know, I had a problem with my voice. Had something on my vocal cords that stopped me from talking. I had to have 2 operations, I had to have it removed. Started off as nodules, my voice was a bit croaky, and it got worse and worse and worse. And then essentially what the surgeon said to me was, it's like a hernia, but on your vocal cords. So as you say, I was out of work for 12 months. I was very low and depressed, and I was probably going through, I basically had the job that I love took off me through no fault of my own. And I was going through what everybody who's out there now is going through now. The only difference is I was on my own, and everybody else was still going off doing gigs. A lot of people were doing gigs on my behalf and so on and so forth. You are going to feel very down. Because we're entertainers at the end of the day. I know magic's all our vehicle, it's what we do to entertain people, but we love entertaining people, do you know what I mean? And you're going to miss that. And I still, you know, I was just at the point of starting to get back this year. I decided this year I'm going to go back full time, and obviously this has happened and I haven't. So for those guys out there, they're in a slightly different position, it's everybody else. And when it comes back, it should come back with a bang, I would think. Once all this is over, assuming it's over, you know, everybody's going to want to get out there, have a good time and stuff, and hopefully it'll come back. The only worry, and I don't want to sound too negative here, is I think it's going to change the way we perform for good. I really believe that. I think the days of hundreds of people being crammed into a tight space probably over, certainly in the middle future, and I think people have got to look at the way they perform clubs of magic now and go back to maybe performing round tables and then doing a stand-up set at the end, rather than, you know, your mix and mingle stuff. But I don't know, it's difficult times for everybody. And I do feel, I mean, Pete, like you say, people are there, they're getting jobs, which is what I had to do. You know, I've been working somewhere for over 2 years now. You just have to, it's back to the drawing board for a minute, mate. It's sad, but it's just the way it is.
And like you say, having blind faith that at some point things will go back to normal. And will you, I mean, you said this year you were planning on going full time again. Is that still, you know, when all this is done and all the smoke has settled and all the dust has cleared?
You know what? I don't think I will now, because this has shown me again. I've already had one taste of it where everything was ripped away and I was earning nothing. And it's shown me again what it can be like. So in all honesty, now I don't think I will. I think I'll carry on doing a day job now.
But there's no shame in that, you know.
No,
I mean,
not at all.
The working pros, not all of them, I don't want to get in trouble here, but there are a percentage of working pros that look down on somebody who's, but you know, look at some of the best magicians in the world, John Bannon, John Gustafario, you know, all of these guys and so many people, they do a full-time job and they just do magic on the side.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was full-time for 15 years and I paid all of my bills, mortgage and everything, 15 years just from magic. And like I say, this COVID situation and what happened to me before with my health, it just shows you how fragile your income can be. You know what I mean? It can just be taken off you like that. Now, I worked all the way through the last lockdown because I'm working in public transport, and I'll work all through this one as well. And I'll still be earning, and I know that my job's safe and I've got X amount of money coming in every month. And then when the gigs start to come back, instead of when I have a gig, it pays my gas bill. When I have a gig, it'll pay towards a holiday or towards a new car and so on. And I think, to be honest, mate, I think that's the way it's going to be for me from now on, because, it just shows how fragile it can be. Yeah.
Well, that brings me on to my last question, which is, what's next? What have you got left on your bucket list? Because I know you've talked about wanting to stay in a job, which is great, but from a magic point of view, you know, and this is a question I ask everyone I interview, and I'm going to say the same thing that I've said to a few people. Your legacy is set, Mr. Congreve. And what I mean by that, and I know you're a very humble guy, and you're almost the sort of person that can't take praise and you laugh it off, but I'm going to tell you right now, you have the career that most people would dream of. You know, like you said, you've had a 15-year career as a pro, you paid all your bills, you've still carried on gigging, you had a horrible thing happen to you, and you came back and you carried on gigging at the same level as you did before. You've released so much magic, so many products. You are considered one of the top creators of magic that there is. You know, you've written now your second book. Your legacy is set. If you never performed again, if you never released anything again, people will always talk about Chris Congreve. So what's next?
I don't know whether I agree with all of that, but
come on, you need to look at from the outside looking in at everything that you do. I've got people banging down my door to want to be on this YouTube channel being interviewed because I've interviewed a lot of big names. I've got people that are banging down my door, and you didn't come to me. I rang you and I was like, mate, I want you on the channel. That's how much I think about you. You know,
thank you. So there's two ways of going here, isn't there? So you can either be like an old pop star and carry on where your material just gets worse and worse and worse and people stop wanting to know, or you can just go out and with a bang. I really don't know, mate. As long as I'm enjoying myself, I'm going to carry on doing what I'm doing. You know, if I create material I think's got worth and value, then I'm going to carry on putting it out there. If I get to the point where people start going, I think the sort of things, and we've seen it in the past where people carry on churning out material and it gets weaker and weaker and weaker and weaker, and you just think, oh, you know. If I get to that point, then I'll stop, obviously. And it's like with performing, as long as I'm enjoying myself and I'm, you know, every time I go out to do a gig, I genuinely have a good time. I love performing. I love it. And so, I'm just going to carry on doing what I do as long as I can, as long as I'm enjoying it and people are enjoying it. You know, the minute I start getting people saying to me, you know, I didn't really like that last thing, or, you know, I'll start leading gigs and people are not enjoying it, then that's when I'll call it a day, really. But until then, I'm going to keep on doing what I do.
I'm going to let you in on my master plan right now. before I finish this interview.
You're going to be the first millionaire from Magic in Warsaw, then, yeah, mate. And then
No. But I do have a master plan that I've had right from when I first started doing these interviews on the channel. And I know you've been too busy to watch a lot of them. But I said at the very beginning of this interview that there's three people who I consider in the UK that set the bar for close-up magic. And that was you, Lee Smith, and Gary Jones. And for many, many years, you appeared on each other's DVDs. You went on Lee's project, and Lee went on Gary's project, and the Eye Candy series, you know, was absolutely amazing.
Which I wasn't involved with.
Which you weren't involved with, and that was a crime.
But I'm not upset about that, Lee and Gary.
Well, here's the thing. This is what I said to Gary on the first interview, because I interviewed Gary first, and I said to Gary, would you consider doing another multi-project with Chris and Lee? And he said, yeah, I would. Yeah, absolutely, I would. It depends on Lee and Chris. And then I interviewed Chris. And I interviewed Lee, and I said, Lee, would you be interested in doing like a three-person project with you and Gary and Chris, and just being in a room for a week and just filming a load of stuff? Because I think it'd just sell bucket loads. And Lee said yes. And then I interviewed Russ Stevens, who hasn't released anything through RSVP for a couple of years because he's been busy on BGT. And I said to him, if the right project came around with people that you've worked with before, would you put it out and film it and do it through RSVP? And he said yes. So you're the final person that I need to speak to right now, Chris. Would you be interested in doing a project with Lee and Gary and you and Russ Stevens?
No.
Because if you say, oh, bugger. If you say yes, literally this week, I'm setting up a WhatsApp group with the four of you, and I'm saying, right, stop pissing around. Let's make this happen.
Yeah, of course I would, yeah. The three guys that I really admire, and well, I'm good friends with all of them. So, yeah, of course I would, yeah, absolutely.
Brilliant. Right. That's all I need to know. Right. The people that are watching this, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. I guarantee it. I'm making it happen. I've spoken to all the key players, so it's going to happen. I'm very excited. Chris, it's been an absolute honour having you on the channel. It really is.
I hope I didn't ramble on too much, mate.
No, mate. I mean, you know, the magic you shared was incredible. The stories that you've told, you know, you are... And that's one of the things that you speak to anybody who knows you. You're such a knowledgeable guy, but you're also such a helpful person as well. You know, you will give advice freely, which is so lovely to see. You know, sometimes people are quite guarded with sharing secrets, but you've not done that. You've sat here and you've talked about residences. And if anybody's watching this, if you do want to, you know, find out, Chris is a great guy. Just contact him. Be more than happy to help you. If people want, I mean, obviously, I know that a lot of your stuff is put out through dealers, but I also know you do sell some of the stuff yourself as well. Mm-hmm. And you are available to book lectures. You have been doing quite a lot of lectures, obviously. You always have. Yeah. How can people contact you if they want to book you for a lecture, or if they want to, you know, speak about your book? You see yourself.
Yeah. So just find my website, chriscongreve.co.uk, which he's a few years old now, so don't judge me on the photos on there. Or just contact me on Facebook, or yeah, just drop me an email, whatever. I am approachable. You know, anybody wants any, and I've had it, whenever you know yourself, whenever you release something, someone will get in contact and say, "Oh, I'm struggling with this, or can you help me with that?" And absolutely, that's what I'm here for. Not a problem.
That's amazing. That's amazing, Chris. Thank you so much for coming on the channel. I really appreciate it. Please, guys, I'm putting his details down below. Make sure that you reach out to Chris. And other than that, make sure you subscribe to the channel. We're going live with 14 videos every single week. We'll be back tomorrow with a review show with me and Ryland, and then the magic stuff on Thursday. And then magic lives every single day of the week at 6 o'clock. So make sure you subscribe to the channel, and I will be back next week with another interview. Chris, thanks very much. I'll see you again, mate. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Talk Magic Podcast.
Magic, magic.
Be sure to like and subscribe to the Magic TV YouTube channel.
Magic TV.
Which includes 14 unique videos every week. Whatever type of magic you're interested in, we've got you covered. Just search YouTube for Craig Petty's Magic TV. Or click on the link in the description from this podcast below. Be sure to join us next Friday at 5 p.m. right here for another Talk Magic Podcast.